Welcome to Focus on Education, a podcast from the Center for Educational Practice at Union University's School of Education.
Today is November 4th, 2013, and this is Eric Marvin, the director of the Roseboro Center for Educational Practice. Today on the Focus on Education podcast, our guest will be Dr. Ben Phillips. Dr. Phillips serves as the director of the EDS and EDD P-12 programs, working on Union University's Jackson, Tennessee campus. Dr. Phillips is also an associate professor of educational leadership. In today's segment, we're going to ask Dr. Phillips to share with us what he knows for sure about the field of education, and then we will come back and ask him a couple follow-up questions about this philosophical statement. Dr. Phillips?
Well, thank you, Eric. I'm happy to be able to share in today's podcast, and so here we go. This I know for sure. When planning a lesson, I try to take the opportunity to ask, what is the most important thing? I've even expanded that perspective to consider an entire course. What is the most important thing? When one of my students finishes his or her full program of studies and walks across the stage at graduation, the question still remains, what is the most important thing? I know there will be a day in the distant future when I'm retired, I'm sitting at home in my rocker recliner, and I'm reflecting on a rewarding career in education. But I'm asking that same thing, what is the most important thing? I've settled in on an answer to that persistent question. For me, the most important thing about education is that students are changed. The obvious implication is that they are changed for the better. If a student is changed for the better in some way after a single lesson, an entire course, or the full degree, then I consider that a success. So the pragmatic side of all teachers begs the question, how do we change students for the better? While the answer is multifaceted with layers of complexity, one way students are changed, particularly in an education context, is through the content. In the P-12 EDD program, which I direct here on the Jackson campus, I have the unique opportunity to teach students near the beginning of their program and again near the end. Strangely, the same obscure theorist, Elton Mayo, appears in the content of both of these bookend courses. In Leadership Issues 1, in the beginning of the program, Elton Mayo is discussed as the father of the human relations approach, a leadership style that focuses on the human element of an organization. In Research Methods and Design, which is a course at the end of the program, Elton Mayo reappears and is credited as describing the phenomenon we know as the Hawthorne Effect, named after the Hawthorne Works factory outside Chicago where Mayo conducted his social experiments decades ago. 2 full years separate these 2 courses. In the last Research Design class, I asked students if they could recall the name of the theorist from the Leadership Issues course. After some thought, a handful of students brought back to memory the name, Elton Mayo. I was both gratified and, quite frankly, surprised that they remembered a lesson from 2 years prior. Later, though, when I reflected on that moment, I was surprised that I was surprised. After all, did I spend all of that time in the leadership class teaching a theorist who would be totally forgettable? Did I not expect students to know the basics of the material beyond the midterm and final exams? Doesn't significant learning imply memorable learning? And more important, what could I continue to do in class that would encourage such memorable learning long after the class has ended? I believe that at least 2 dynamics about the content contribute to this learning that lasts. The first is that the content is explored in depth. Examining a topic in depth, digging deeper and deeper, is entirely new to the contemporary learner. In today's Google environment, a simple search of Elton Mayo returns some 3.9 million hits in 0.29 seconds. However, those hits are all superficial, shallow blurbs about a man who deserves a much more thorough investigation. The way today's students process information with technology is the equivalent of reading 100 abstracts, but never 1 article in entirety. I have resolved to be countercultural, and thereby novel, by trying to structure my course content to be the proverbial mile deep, even if that means the breadth of the course is closer to an inch wide. In the end, I believe students have a better chance of remembering the few topics we explored in depth than the dozens of topics we barely glossed over. The second dynamic that contributes to learning at last is the network of solid connections between the new material and everything it relates to. I have come to see my work as a professor as one who builds connections, neural pathways, as it turns out, between the current topic and real life, between the current topic and old topics, between the current topic and on-the-job realities, between the current topic and scripture, between the current topic and future courses, between the current topic and, well, you get the idea. When the new learning on the new dendrite is so intimately connected to dozens of other dendrites, who could forget it? I'm excited about the upcoming research methods and design class that will come about in January. I'm going into the course with every expectation that students will be able to recall a lesson from 2 years ago. Remembering that lesson would be an indicator that the students had indeed changed for the better because of a deep and well-connected encounter with the content. This I know for sure. In education, change is the most important thing.
Dr. Phillips, we certainly do appreciate you taking the time to share your philosophical statement about what you know for sure with us today as a part of the Focus on Education podcast. As we do at the end of these sessions, we like to follow up with a couple questions to delve a little bit deeper into your philosophy of education. The first question we'd like to consider is this. In this Google era in which we live, you've expressed some concern that students often learn a little about a lot, as opposed to learning a lot about a little. Do you believe that you're holding to this philosophy of education is something that you're doing because you're teaching more specialized courses, perhaps graduate level courses? And kind of as a follow-up to that question, is this the same type of advice, same philosophy that you would recommend to those teaching at the elementary or secondary level?
Right. Those are good questions. And I guess part of what is the context of thinking about this is to consider it this way. And this is really the way a lot of college professors are beginning to think about their own job, really, is, am I needed anymore? With the access to technology, it's so prevalent, it's so fast, it's expansive. And so with the access to knowledge being what it is today, am I even needed? Do I even have a place? Let's pick on somebody, for example, that teaches U.S. history. And so a U.S. history professor, is the U.S. history professor really going to say anything that could not be found on Google, through a Google search? And so we really begin to ask this question, are we becoming outdated and unnecessary? And the reality is, I think it's more about finding what is our place in this new environment. And part of our place is not that I am, to use the education term we say so often, the sage on the stage. I'm not needed to fulfill that role anymore. And that's true very likely all the way down through the high school and maybe even into middle school levels. I don't think we would have elementary school students who are doing Google searches. So yes, for them, it might, that's not the case there. But the idea then is, if students can find the knowledge without me, what is my new role? And my new role becomes helping students, for example, make sense of the new knowledge. As I mentioned in the podcast with the reading, draw connections with the new knowledge, have more understanding or perspective about the new knowledge. But for me to just say my job, even at maybe the middle and high school level, is for you to just hear this date and memorize this person's name and know this certain place where they lived, I really think the new era of education is pushing us where that is or will become extinct. It's much more about, so now that I can get this information, what does it mean and how do I use it?
It's an interesting perspective. So it's more about the analysis of information, helping students process this at a deeper level, I think is what you're getting at here.
Exactly.
Than just perhaps surface knowledge information. As a second question here, you also spoke as a part of your statement that it is important for you to help your students build these mental connections, these neural pathways in their brain, to help them connect what they are learning to multiple sources that already exist in their brain, to things that they encounter on the job, things they read in scripture, things that they encounter in real life, other courses they have taken, other materials they have read, other things they have perhaps encountered on the World Wide Web. But from a practical perspective, for someone who is listening out there who is an educator, what's some practical advice for teachers at any level for helping them help their students build similar connections in the minds of their students?
Well, I think that part of it goes to the heart of what's the most important stage in the process of putting together a lesson. And in my opinion, the most important part is the planning phase. Everything lives or dies based on what I did during the planning phase. So as a practical suggestion, I would say during the planning phase, it would be important for the teacher to consider those questions, to say, okay, here's the new content. I know my objective today. I know exactly what I'm going to go in and teach, although it probably wouldn't be saying today. I would probably be saying, you know, next week. I know what I'm going to go in and teach. And so how can I take this new learning and what do the students already know that I can latch this onto? What did students learn last year in another course? What's going on in the world around us, just the current events that would make sense of this or connections to Scripture? So it's really just being intentional to ask all those questions during the planning phase so that then all that comes out when the actual lesson is unfolding. I really feel for, I probably should say feel sorry for the teacher who thinks, well, I'm just going to pull all this off on the fly while the lesson is unfolding, because that can be very, very difficult to just kind of do it at the last moment as the lesson's going on. And then in the back of your mind say, okay, now I need to draw the connections. It would have been so much better to have considered all that in the planning phase and built that into the lesson plan. And so that would be my advice on a practical level, is during the planning phase, make all these considerations and have it built into the lesson plan itself.
I think that's great advice, especially for new teachers who are perhaps not familiar with, and they're perhaps eager to get in front of their class and perhaps communicate this information with their students and to share the so-called content knowledge that they possess, perhaps glossing over the importance of planning. But I think you bring to light the great value and the great importance of instructional planning. We do appreciate your time today and your willingness to be a part of the Focus on Education podcast. Thank you for being here.
All right. Thank you.
This has been the Focus on Education podcast. Visit uu.edu/centers/edpractice to learn more about the Center for Educational Practice and Union University's School of Education.